I've often wondered how they arranged that, for the horse was certainly lame, and I doubt if the aide, his name was Stoibel, just a boy, had anything to do with it. I cursed a bit, and De Gautet suggested we turn and go back. The boy wouldn't hear of it. He would walk his horse slowly down to Strelau, he said, and we should go on. De Gautet looked doubtful. He was a clever actor, that one. But I was fool enough to agree. I can't think now how I was so green, but there it was. I never thought of foul play. I, who normally throw myself behind cover if someone breaks wind unexpectedly, was completely off guard. I had my pistols, to be sure, and even my knife, for I'd got into the wise habit of going armed whenever I left the lodge. But De Gautet's manner must have disarmed me completely. We went on together, and about 20 minutes after parting from Stoibel, we reached the summit, a pleasant little tree-fringed plateau, split by a deep gorge, through which a river rushed, throwing up clouds of mist against the rocky sides. The whole table-top was hemmed in by trees, but there was a clear patch of turf near the edge of the gorge, and here we dismounted to have a look down into the bottom, 100 feet below. I don't care for heights, but the scene was so pleasant and peaceful that I never felt a moment's unease until De Gautet spoke. "This Jotunschlucht," says he, meaning the gorge, and something in his voice sounded the alarm in my brain. It may have been the flatness of his tone, or the fact that he was closer behind me than I felt he should have been. But with the instinct of pure panic, I threw myself sideways on the turf, turning as I fell, to try to face him. If his pistol hadn't misfired, he would have got me. I heard the click, even as I moved, and realized that he'd been aiming point-blank at my back. As I tried to scramble up, he dropped it with an oath, drew its mate from beneath his tunic, and leveled it at me. I screamed, "No! No!" as he thumbed back the lock, and he hesitated a split second, to see if I should leap again and to make sure of his aim. In a novel, of course, or a play, murders are not committed so. The villain leers and gloats, and the victim pleads. In my practical experience, however, killing gentlemen like De Gautet are far too practiced for such nonsense. They shoot suddenly and cleanly, and the job's done. I knew I had perhaps a heartbeat between me and damnation, and in sheer terror I snatched the seaman's knife from the top of my boot and hurled it at him with all my force, sprawling down again as I did so. If I've had more than my share of bad luck in my life, I've had some good to make up for it. I had some now. The knife only hit him butt first on the leg, but it caused him to take a quick step back. His heel caught on a stone or tuft. He overbalanced. The pistol cracked, the ball went somewhere above my head, and then I was on top of him, smashing blindly with my fists, knees, and anything else, trying to beat him into the ground. He was tall and active, but nothing like my weight, and flashy in the grip of mortal fear, with nowhere to run to and no choice but to fight. He's probably a dreadful opponent. I was roaring at the top of my voice and clawing at him for dear life. He managed to shove me off once, but he made the error of lunging for the fallen knife, and I was able to get one solid, full-blown boot against the side of his head. He groaned and fell back, his eyes rolling up in his head, and collapsed limply on the turf.